Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. On this 13th day of September 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are in Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, and we will do text 10 again. It's important. 4:10. Vitaraga bhayakrodha.
Vitaraga bhayakrodha.
Manmaya mamapashita.
Manmaya mamapashita.
Bhavod jnana tapasa.
Bhavod jnana tapasa.
Puta mon bhavamagata.
Puta mon bhavamagata.
Translation again. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Purport. As described above, it is very difficult for a person who is too materially affected to understand the personal nature of the Supreme Absolute Truth. Generally, people who are attached to the bodily conception of life are so absorbed in materialism that it is almost impossible for them to understand how the Supreme can be a person. Such materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance, and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep this same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the Supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again. And so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence attainable without individual personality. This is a kind of fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge of spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all. Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause. And some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. One has to get rid of all three stages of attachment to the material world: negligence of spiritual life, fear of spiritual personal identity, and the conception of void that arises from frustration in life. To get free from these three stages of the material concept of life, one has to take complete shelter of the Lord, guided by the bona fide spiritual master, and follow the disciplines and regulative principles of devotional life. The last stage of the devotional life is called bhava, or transcendental love of God. According to the Bhakti Samhita Sindhu 1.4.15.16, the science of devotional service, adha shraddha tatak sadhu sango tabadanak kriya. Tato narta nivritti syat, tato nishta ruchis tataha. Ata saktis tato bhavas, tatak prema bhudanchati, sadhakanam ayam premna, prato bhave bhave kramaha. In the beginning, one must have a preliminary desire for self-realization. This will bring one to the stage of trying to associate with persons who are spiritually elevated. In the next stage, one becomes initiated by an elevated spiritual master, and under his instruction, the neophyte devotee begins the process of devotional service. By execution of devotional service under the guidance of the spiritual master, one becomes free from all material attachment, attains steadiness in self-realization, and acquires a taste for hearing about the absolute personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. This taste leads one further forward to attachment for Krishna consciousness, which is matured in bhava, or the preliminary stage of transcendental love of God. Real love for God is called prema, the highest perfectional stage of life. In the prema stage, there is constant engagement in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. So, by the slow process of devotional service, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master, one can attain the highest stage, being freed from all material attachment, from the fearfulness of one's individual spiritual personality, and from the frustrations that result in void philosophy. Then one can ultimately attain to the abode of the Supreme Lord. Om jnana tamarandasya jnanandana shalakya chakshu unmilatam mena tasmai shri gurave namah. I was born in darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master Srila Prabhupada opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So we repeated this verse because verse, and especially the purport, I found very illuminating and conclusive. So I'd like to go over it again. We discussed it last night, but we didn't really discuss too much the latter portion here. So the first phrase here, Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha, in the Sanskrit, this is a phrase you'll find several times in the Bhagavad Gita. And the meaning is free of attachment, fear, and anger. So we learn at the end of the last chapter that our real enemy is kama, lust. Arjuna asks, what is it that forces one to act seemingly, practically involuntarily, against one's own wishes? And Krishna's answer was very forthright. It's kama. Kama esha krodha esha rajogana samudbaha. Arising from the mode of passion, which is all around us and which often affects us, this kama, which is lust, strong desire for the opposite sex, and other strong desires, and which are inevitably frustrated and which bring anger, this is our real enemy in this world. It's very telling because Arjuna's on a battlefield, after all. The whole conversation is taking place. So the enemy is not over there. The enemy is in here, the real enemy of the living entity. And that is material desire, which leads to attachment. You become attached to all kinds of things which you think give you pleasure, right? And those attachments are just like ropes that bind the heart to the things of this world. And at the time of death, if you're full of attachments, they will bring you back to another body to try to keep fulfilling those desires and enjoying those attachments. So here Krishna says you have to be free of these things. A raga by a quota. Raga is more or less lust, is material desire. And he explains why in the purport here why each of them is an impediment. How someone who's too much affected by one of these three is blocked from being a devotee. So we'll get to that in a minute. But the alternative is, here's the ideal in the verse, if free of that, and manmaya, meaning absorbed in thinking of me. I explained last night that this suffix maya means full of or absorbed in. Like you have the phrase karunamayi. This is a female form. You know, it's like a name for Radharani. Full of mercy, overflowing with compassion. This is karunamayi. Or she's also known as Krishnamayi, meaning completely absorbed in thought of Krishna, love for Krishna. So this maya means, full of thoughts of Krishna, always thinking of me. Mamu Pashada, taking full shelter of me. Now, full shelter means depending on Krishna, you know, for everything, really, one's livelihood. Just like Arjuna will here, depend on Krishna, right? He's taking... In the 11th chapter, Krishna says, Nimitta matram bhavasavyasachan. It's a famous phrase. Just be my agent. The battle is already won. He shows Arjuna a vision of all of the enemy being killed. You know, he says, they've already been killed. It's my desires, my plan. You just be my agent. You don't have to worry about success or failure. This is your perfection, just being my agent, just like a hand on a body. Does the will of our will, right? So that's taking full shelter of Krishna, relying on him for protection, for maintenance, for everything. That's upashita. And then many jnana tapasa puta have become purified by knowledge of me and by austerity. And thus, bhava magata, they've attained love for me and also they've attained my nature. This word bhava means several things. It means a nature that you can attain, or it means also love. Bhava is a preliminary stage of prema. So let's go through here, and this purport is very illuminating. We'll kind of summarize the first long paragraph here. So raga is like the default in this material world. Everyone is beset with so many attachments. And therefore, they're not even interested. It doesn't even compute. The idea of austerity, denying the senses or controlling the senses, self-realization, all of that is you know, doesn't seem to make any sense to many people in this world. Or, I got my own religion, you know, and which is oftentimes simply for the sake of improving the condition in this world. Many people go to church, they pray for health, wealth, security, whatever it may be, right? They're not generally praying for detachment from this world. That's an impediment because materialists cannot even imagine that there is a transcendental body, which is imperishable, full of knowledge, and eternally blissful. So this is a major impediment, raga. Now this baya word, this especially relates to the impersonalists, because they understand, you know, the Brahmavadis, those who understand the ills of birth, old age, disease, and death. This is a basic principle of philosophy in the East, you know. And whether you're Buddhist or you're impersonalists or you're Vaishnavs, you understand that you cannot be happy and satisfied and peaceful in this world. So how to get out of it? You understand that there's a cycle called samsara, chakra, that we're going round and round, birth, old age, disease, and death, birth, old age, disease, and death. And you want to break out of that. Now, if someone is... understands that this body certainly is a source of misery, right? It just, you have to feed it, you have to clothe it, you have to keep it warm, and after some time, it's a machine after all. It doesn't work so well, you get sick, it's disease, you know. The things that you love are ripped away from you, the things that you hate are pushed in your face. This is material life. Maybe, you know, it doesn't happen all at once, but that's really what happens. So, I don't want anybody. Body means suffering. You know, this is the conclusion. And, you know, because that's our experience. Material body, so I don't want to have a body. I just want to be situated in pure spirit. Any kind of sense, any kind of activity is material. And this is called why they're called Mayavadis. It means they look at Krishna's body, and they say, oh, that's also material. They look at the form of the deity on the altar. That's also material because there's some variety there. Food is food, whether it's prasadam or you buy it down at Vons. You know, it's all maya. You know, so they can't have any prasadam. They can't enjoy prasadam. They have to eat the most tasteless thing. That's best for them because otherwise you get attached. You see the problem? So they're trying to avoid the spiritual life, which is full of sensory activity. Haven't you noticed that? We're chanting and hearing. We're seeing the deity. We're smelling the incense. Tasting the prasadam, glorifying the Lord, and what are the Lord's activities and lila that we want to join? Full of all kinds of varieties and sensations, spiritual sensations, because it's pleasing the Krishna senses. But by pleasing Krishna senses, we become enlivened. When we say Krishna is known as Govinda, what does the name mean, Govinda? Who can remember, Alec?
One who pleases the cows and the senses.
Yeah, one who pleases the cows and the senses. Now, we know about how much he loves the cows. But how is it that he pleases our senses? Well, the wonderful thing is that when you use your ears for hearing glorification of Krishna, right, there's a certain pleasure that comes there. That's the real nectar of the ears, for the ears. When you see when you see the beauty of Krishna, or you see Krishna in the world, then that's real pleasure for the eyes. And all the senses have their, you know, pleasure in relation to Krishna. That's how he pleases the senses. Not that Krishna, you know, gives us sense gratification, and that's why he's known as Govinda. That's a big mistake. But he really is the pleasure of the spiritual senses, which we all have. These material senses are covering our spiritual senses. But even using these material senses, we can develop our spiritual senses. This is the magic, if you will, of bhakti. So the impersonalists, they don't believe any of this. They want to merge into that Brahman. They don't want to take birth again. No senses, no life, no activity, just pure consciousness. I know that I exist. You know, there's Satchitananda body. It is said that Krishna has a Satchitananda body. Ishvara Padma Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. This is the first verse of the fifth chapter of the Brahma Samhita. And there, Lord Brahma, the first being in the universe, who's the most intelligent, you know, so intelligent that he needs four heads to hold those brains, you know. He meditated for so long, and he came to the conclusion, Krishna. It's Krishna. Krishna's God. Ishvara Padma Krishna. That's what that means. And he has a form, which is eternal, full of knowledge, and full of bliss. Now, we're part and parcel of Krishna. We also have a form that is full of knowledge, eternal, and full of bliss. But because we're minute, we can get covered over. Krishna can never get covered over. Therefore, he's known as Achyuta. He never falls under the sway or under the control of material energy. That's why it's called Achyuta. Achyuta means falling. Achyuta means never falling. We're not like that, unfortunately, because we're minute. So we also have that body. Now, here the bhaya, don't forget that bhaya means afraid. So the materialists, the impersonalists are afraid of a body. They conflate the spiritual and material body. They throw out the baby with the bathwater, you know. And so they can never really relish devotion, the nectar of the rasa of devotional service. Because they don't believe that God ultimately has a form or a personality. They believe the absolute is just the white light, you know. How boring, isn't it? I mean, for any devotee who's tasted even one drop of nectar, Krishna consciousness, it's just like anathema. I don't want to think about that, you know. And indeed, our acharyas say, kaivalyam nadakayate, that for those who are real devotees of Lord Chaitanya, following in this line, this kaivalya, which means oneness, is just like going to hell. Just like going to hell. You lose there's no bhakti. You know, there's no nectar bhakti. And this is just Brahmananda, which is basically all pain is stopped. It's a negative pleasure. You know, it's not any positive pleasure. So that's bhaya. And then the krodha aspect. So raga is the materialist. They don't even think about it. Bhaya are the impersonalists. They're afraid of getting a body. Or they want to merge. And krodha is anger. This is describing like those who have searched here, searched there. They went to this philosophy, that, this yoga studio. I tried that, tried that. Or Western philosophy. I used to study Western philosophy. How frustrating that is, you know. There's Plato and Socrates, and you go through, and then Heidegger, and then the existentialist, nothing means anything. And then Wittgenstein is trying to figure out what language means, and, you know, coming up, basically nothing, you know. And that's what this is all about. Ultimately, nobody has the answer. Nobody has it. You guys got your Hare Krishna, and there's also those guys over there, and it's this, and nothing really means anything. I'm going to take the position of absolute skepticism and just void out, you know. In other words, you've been disappointed. You've been cheated too many times. And that's a real hazard in this world, because there's so many bogus philosophies. Every day, there's probably 100 religions invented on the internet, you know. Why not? You know, there's somebody out there who believe in it. And I'll send you some money, you know, yeah, I'll give you the... I remember this is a long time ago, but, you know, religion can easily be turned into a scam when it becomes materialized or material motivation enters. I remember I lived in Philadelphia for a while in the 80s, and we got in the mail this prayer. It was a cleverly designed piece, mass mailing, of a prayer napkin, was it? Or a handkerchief, you know? And you put in your donation, you know, and then send it back, and we'll pray over this for whatever you want. And I have so many testimonials. Yeah, my cancer was cured. Yeah, I was broke. You know, I got, you know. I mean, on the average, if you have 10,000 people, you know, they just make them up, you know. And they're just sending out mass mailing, and so many people believe in it. You know, pious. Well, maybe it works. I'll give them $10. You know, but you see the corruption of religion. So one could easily become cynical about all this, isn't it? You know, guys, big preachers, the televangelists, and it turns out they have so many girlfriends, or they're going to the, you know, that's happened, right, over history. So anyway, this is krodha. I'm angry. They're not going to cheat me anymore. And unfortunately, you meet the devotee on the street, and you're not receptive because you've been cheated. So you take shelter of some hallucination or drugs, you know. That's also, you think, is the shelter. You know, if you think about it, let's step back a minute from the discussion. Life is you know, just a search for different states of consciousness. You know, I mean, even if the person who just goes down to the bar, you know, and just tells you forget about the hard day they had, they want to try to change their consciousness, right? To ease the pain, to salve the pain of the consciousness, right? Or even somebody goes to college. You're trying to change your consciousness so that to get a better place or a place of less pain or whatever. It's all like that. So this, if you take shelter, you know, take shelter of drugs or some crazy philosophy or cult or group or, you know, gangs or whatever it may be, that's also a kind of religion. It's a kind of way in which you want to change your reality so that you'll have some kind of security, some kind of a sense of happiness in this world. You know, but without real knowledge of where to find that, you get frustrated again and again, right? And when you get into drugs, you can do damage so that really you can't concentrate anymore, you can't focus normally, and it can be a real dangerous thing. So these are blockages. But those who are fortunate, who take shelter of Krishna and purify, really realize it's a question of purification, that all of this realization is already within us. The wonderful teaching of Lord Chaitanya, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunoi, Shavanadi Shuddha Chitte Kadayayudoi. It's a great verse. So he says, Nitya Siddha, let's see what this verse means. So Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. So he says the Krishna Prema, love for Krishna, is an eternal perfection. Nitya Siddha, right? And it's already there. We're eternal, and that perfection is here. But we've forgotten it. It's buried inside under so much crud. You know, the heart is covered over with all of these attachments, with krodha, raga baya krodha, with lust, anger, greed. Right? All of our experience in this world has given us so many memories, and we've forgotten Krishna. We've forgotten that love. But we have the propensity to love. You have to do so. It's directed in matter rather. At the real recipient, who can reciprocate perfectly that love. So Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunoi. He's saying there it's not external to us. It's not something artificial. You know, if you want to become a weightlifter, that's artificial. You know, you have to work hard, build up your muscles like that. It's not intrinsic. And if you stop working out, it'll turn to flab. You know, but devotional service, it's already there. So he says. So how do you awaken it? Then the key for it: Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte. So shuddha chitte means purifying the heart or the consciousness chiefly through the process of hearing and chanting. Shravana adi means hearing, etc. Our whole process of devotional service begins with chanting and hearing Hare Krishna, right? All of you are more or less serious chanters of Hare Krishna. You know, either the beads and the kirtan. This is how we get purified, and all of this makes so much means so much to us. Only because there's some purification that's taken place. So, Shavanada Chudike, Kadaya Udoy. That prema, that perfection, awakens. This Udoy is just like the sun coming up, you know, in your heart, or the moon, you know. Udoy means, right, that love for Krishna awakens. It's a wonderful thing. That means every single person, even the animals have it, but they can't awaken it because they can't hear. But we can hear and understand with our brain and repeat and follow the process and. It's all there, every single one of us. Doesn't matter, you know, age, race, country, it doesn't matter. So that brings us to the second part of the purport, which we'll go over now. These two verses are key to understanding the process of devotional service. So let's go over. Adha, shraddha, tapas. So we went through. So the first thing is, adha means first, okay? Shraddha. Now, shraddha means faith. Faith is a very important thing. Why? Because all of this stuff is invisible. You know, Krishna is, we can't see him now. We're too covered. So everything is beyond our immediate sensation. Yet we need to have faith in it in order to work toward a goal that's beyond our immediate ken. So therefore, there has to be some faith. How do we get that? Very simple. By associating with the faithful. By meeting someone who is so faithful and so realized that they can implant that faith, the beginning faith in us. Now, this was Prabhupada's great gift, one of his great gifts. You know, he came alone to America. I mean, externally, he was alone. Of course, he had Krishna in his heart. He had the whole program. But he was a lone warrior, kind of. Now here's the real puzzle. You know, how to implant faith in this process, which was completely alien to people in this environment, New York City, 1965, 66. How to implant that faith? Well, he just was himself, and he was on fire with Krishna consciousness. And so those who met him got interested. You know, the fortunate souls, they were brought into the orbit. Some, more or less, started the process for a while and went away. You know, then when he had his first place in 26 Second Avenue, famous place of pilgrimage, he could actually have a regulated program, and it was right in the middle of the beginning of the the magic mid-60s with the hippies and everything, where people were unmoored. They weren't, the young people, I was one of them, were like, they weren't plugged in to what had gone before. There was a great churning and questioning of just the ordinary materialistic life. And LSD, you know, and all of these things. And so there was a certain group that were very receptive. And he met them, and he was able to implant their interest. And they started chanting. And as soon as the chanting starts, then the heart opens up, and the faith is more easily won, because you're getting some realization. As soon as you chant for 5 minutes, something's going on, you know. And so that was, and he implanted the faith, and they in turn became advanced and can give faith to others. Now this faith is kind of preliminary interest. So preliminary desire for self-realization, Prabhupada calls it here, you see. Someone is curious, they come to the temple. But what happens is they come sadhu sangha. Sadhu sangha is key. You know how, you know, we have the satsang program? Satsang is just short for sadhu sangha. Now what does that mean? Sangha means two things. It means association, and it means attachment. So both things have to be there. And you come into the association of devotees and sincere devotees, and what's going to happen? You're going to hear Bhagavad Gita, you're going to hear the holy name, right? You're going to get prasadam, see the deities. So this is called a sadhu sangha, and from that, interest, those who are receptive, who are fortunate, get more interest. Read a book, begin a little chanting, and that's where the bhajana kriya comes in. See? Bhajana kriya means doing bhajan, chiefly chanting Hare Krishna and other things. Now, from all of that, now Krishna is not an impartial bystander here. He's in your heart. You know, he's taking an interest, great interest, in you coming back to him. That's the whole point of the Bhagavad Gita. He's come down here to speak it. So what does it say in the second chapter, first canto? Shrinvatam sukata krishna punya shavana kirtana riddhyantaksto yabadhrani vidunoti suritsata. So in this verse, Suta Goswami is explaining that by hearing about Krishna in the heart, he understands, oh, this devotee is hearing about me. Nicely. What punya shravana kirtana? And what is that hearing and chanting? It's vibrations that are in themselves bring piety. Just hearing them. Punya shravana kirtana means that they become a devotee just by hearing and chanting. So Krishna himself, in the heart, he's there, right, as super soul. Abhadrani vidunoti. Vidunoti means to cleanse. He cleanses away the abhadras. Some of them are this attachment, fear, and anger. Those are some inauspicious things in our heart. So vidunoti sudit satam. It's such a nice phrase. Sudit satam. The satam are the saints, the devotees. And sudit, we have this phrase in English called bosom buddies, right? Someone who's really close and maybe will really go out of his way even defend you, or someone is very close to you. So that's surit. Rit means heart. Surit means our dearmost friend is Krishna. He's there in the heart, and he's cleaning away the abhadras, those things which are bringing us so much suffering by bringing us back again and again. So that's what's going on by this bhajana kriya. You know, if we do it right, under the guidance of the realized soul and good association, then anarta nivritti. This is the next step. These are all step by step. That's what it says at the end. Kramaha. The last word here is krama. Means stepping. Padikrama. You're walking around. You'd be walking around the dhamma. So, anarta nivritti. The eradication of anartas. Now, anarta simply means unwanted things. You know? What don't we want? And this is like an important mental exercise. We don't want all of these unwanted desires. So part of you wants it, otherwise it wouldn't be a desire. But your higher self doesn't want it. Just like a drug addict or someone who's smoking cigarettes. You definitely want to smoke, but you don't want that desire to smoke, right? That's the whole idea. You see the conflict there. Your higher self, your intelligence says, no, this is killing me. Your lower self says, yeah, light up, just one more, right? This is the struggle. Higher self, lower self. So that's what anarta is. It's something that is pushing you that you know is bad for you. You know, anger, lust, greed, whatever it may be. And that's becoming nivritti, cleansed away, pacified. No more. It's just like the drug addict wakes up, he's free. You know, you're free of the desire for nicotine or alcohol or whatever it may be. Those are extreme examples of attachments. But all the attachments we have, subtle and gross, are kind of addictive. And they have to be cleansed away and replaced with desire for Krishna. So now, assuming we're nicely moving along step by step, we're beginning with a little preliminary faith, we come into the associated devotees, we begin Bhajana Kriya. In the middle there is initiation by a bona fide spiritual master, which confirms you in the faith. Very important, take a vow, you know, vows. And then anartha dhimvi continues, and then you come to the point of nishta. Nishta is firm faith, full confidence, because you are actually having some experience. And by your reading, your study, your intellect is blossoming, full of, you know, the philosophy you understand. And nishta means firm conviction. Now that nishta is defined by Krishna's Kaviraj in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he calls it faith. It gets a little confusing. There's preliminary faith, but this nishta says, Shraddha shabde vishraskori sudhida nishchoy krishne bhakti koli sarva karma katahoy. He says real faith is defined as the firm conviction, without doubt, that just by the activities of Krishna consciousness, all my aspirations will be fulfilled. I'm not a part-timer, you know? Like you go once a week, Sunday, and I'm very religious, and the rest of the week, forget it. You know, do whatever I want. And Sunday, go back. It's not like that. I fully realize that the activities in Krishna consciousness are what's really meaningful for me, and they will bring me fulfillment in this life. That's nishta. And with that firm faith, you proceed on, continue with hearing and chanting, never stops. That's the basic principle in all the other services. And then you start to get ruchi. Ruchi means a taste. Like the taste for hearing and chanting. You know, it's such a wonderful thing, this sankirtan. If you do it enough, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen some of these DVDs that Yadavar has of the early days in Krishna consciousness. Badri Narayan was, you know, we went out at 10 o'clock on Harinam, came back at 2 for an hour lunch, then went back out again for another 8 hours till 10 at the night, came back, crashed, get up at 6. You know, they didn't get up at 4 in those days. That's a lot of chanting. Well, believe me, the people weren't bored out there and they weren't, you know, suffering. You get a taste for the hearing, chanting Hare Krishna, and you can see it in their faces. You know, we're not bereft of that either, but that's called ruchi, taste for the holy name, and everything else in Krishna consciousness. The beauty of the deities, serving out prasadam, service is so nectar, you know. So, you know, going to work is always suffering, right? You don't want to be there, the boss hates you, you hate the boss, you're only doing it for the money. There's no ruchi there, you know, generally. But in Krishna consciousness, you're not getting paid money, but you're getting paid in something, you know, millions of times more valuable, attraction for Krishna, and freedom from all of the addictions to matter. So that's ruchi, and that matures, and we're going up the ladder here, asakti. You see, the second verse begins, atasakti. This ata means then, asakti. It means attraction for Krishna personally. You start to like Krishna. You're attracted by his personality. You want to hear more and more about him, you know. It's an important stage. And then bhava, you know, real ecstasy. This is incredible to really think about this. Bhava here means sthayi bhava. Sthayi means steady ecstasy. Just imagine, you know, waking up in the morning and you're in ecstasy. And the rest of the day you're spending in ecstasy. And you go to bed and you sleep and you're still in ecstasy. Where is that in the material world? Never, right? The material life is just a lot of, you know, a long desert. Working hard, trying to get some money, trying to buy something you think will give you happiness. Then maybe some peak experiences, whatever it may be, you can write your own list, you know, and then more desert, you know, and then the suffering goes. Never sthayi bhava. But if this is based on the soul. The soul is not changing in all these experiences. So if we can, you know, refine our consciousness to such that we're always thinking of Krishna and we're in touch with him, and serving him constantly, then that state can be attained. Now, let's be, you know, I'm realistic. I've been doing this for 40 years. I mean, I'd like to do this, and I really want to attain a greater desire for this before I leave this body. But, all right, so maybe we don't attain this highest state this lifetime. No loss. Next lifetime, you know, you begin where you left off. This is the wondrous thing about Krishna consciousness. Everything material is a bust. Can't take it with you. All these guys struggling so hard to make money and hold on to their money, buying big cars, yachts, whatever they are, or just ordinary people trying to make it in this world. Whatever they're doing, it's gone. Because the body's gone. Finished. You know, I've been around for a while now. I've seen, you know, at least a dozen devotees pass that way. You know? And we all, the cremation is there, and then you get this little box full of ashes. It's kind of a shock, you know. Because we, no matter how much philosophy we read, we do identify with our bodies and we see people as their bodies. You know? And then suddenly they're not there anymore. And this is what I was thinking was them. And you realize, of course, philosophically, yeah, they're still somewhere, you know, chanting Hare Krishna. But this whole life is finished. No more. You know, this is gone. It's like a dream. It's finished. Yeah, that's the reality. So, but whatever assets you've developed in Krishna consciousness stays with you. You come up to the Asakti platform, you have some attraction for Krishna, fine. You know, you've made some progress this lifetime. At least I know I didn't start out have any attraction for Krishna. I had no idea. Now I have a little attraction. All right, great. If I leave my body tomorrow, then I'll start with that next day. When you take the broader view, how many millions of lifetimes we've had, you know, we all hit the lottery, every one of us. Just to come in touch with this. And why not cash in the ticket completely and go back to Godhead? You know, we have to become determined, though. That's the hard part. So then, finally, prema, which is the final goal. This constant love, feeling of love for Krishna. So that's sadhakanam. Now, sadhakanam means practice of prema. One gets the prema. Prado bhave bhave krama. Step by step, these things develop. So this is a very nice description of, you know, from faith to love. This is the step from faith to love. And the more we increase our faith and we practice nicely the sadhana, the quicker the purification will take place. It's just a question of how fast. You know, if we want to drag our feet and we want to hold on to material things, okay, it'll be slower. You know, we even go through a period where we forget all about Krishna. I mean, a lot of devotees, even in this time, I forgot so many years, then they got slapped around by material energy, and come back, lotus feet of Krishna. I remember that time, that was my happiest time. I was just dancing and chanting, cleaning the pots, you know, in a Hare Krishna temple, way back when I was 25. Now I'm 55, yeah, let me go back to the temple. But why put it off, you know, why muck around in this material world? Okay, so that's what we'll spend that much time on this verse. Any questions or comments? There's a lot there, very rich. Again, raga baya krodha, three impediments to devotion. We don't want to let any of them stop us. Okay, moving on. Yes, oh, go ahead.
I think you were saying subtle attachments.
I'm sorry? There are gross attachments.
What is subtle attachments, like examples?
Sure. Pride, you know. You can't touch it, you can't smell it, but it's a big, big hurdle, you know. Adoration, distinction, profit, adoration, distinction. There's so many subtle things. Desire for you know, reading novels and things like that. Nothing's going on there. It's all going on in your brain, but that can be a big attachment. Rather than, you know, sex life, food, drink, you know what I mean? In some ways, the subtle attachments are much more difficult, you know, because... They're much maybe longer standing, and they're gross and subtle. Just like we have a gross and subtle body, we have gross and subtle attachments. You know, the mind and the ego. Stroke the ego, you know, egotistical. Get praised, you know. That's why we say amani na manadena. How do you chant constantly? Well, one of the prescriptions is amani na manadena. To have no sense of false pride and to be always glorifying others. Not easy. Because we naturally, you know, remember the red birds, you get the star from your first grade. You know, because that feels good, right? Yeah, I got an A, B. And it goes on and on and on and on, you know, the whole life. So they have subtle attachments and gross attachments to them. Okay, let's go on. The next verse is also very important. Yeyatamam papadyante. Yeyatamam papadyante. Pams tathaiva bhajamyaham. Mamavartmanavartante. Manushyak Partha Sarvashaha. As all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Pita. Purport. Everyone is searching for Krishna in the different aspects of his manifestations. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is partially realized in his impersonal Brahma Jyoti effulgence and as the all-pervading Supersoul dwelling within everything, including the particles of atoms. But Krishna is fully realized only by his pure devotees. Consequently, Krishna is the object of everyone's realization, and thus anyone and everyone is satisfied according to one's desire to have him. In the transcendental world also, Krishna reciprocates with his pure devotees in the transcendental attitude, just as the devotee wants him. One devotee may want Krishna as supreme master, another as his personal friend, another as his son, and still another as his lover. Krishna rewards all the devotees equally according to their different intensities of love for him. In the material world, the same reciprocations of feelings are there, and they are equally exchanged by the Lord with the different types of worshippers. The pure devotees, both here and in the transcendental abode, associate with him in person and are able to render personal service to the Lord and thus derive transcendental bliss in his loving service. As for those who are impersonalists and who want to commit spiritual suicide by annihilating the individual existence of the living entity, Krishna helps also by absorbing them into his effulgence. Such impersonalists do not agree to accept the eternal blissful personality of Godhead. Consequently, they cannot relish the bliss of transcendental personal service to the Lord, having extinguished their individuality. Some of them, who are not firmly situated even in the impersonal existence, return to this material field to exhibit their dormant desires for activities. They are not admitted into the spiritual planets, but they are again given a chance to act on the material planets. For those who are fruitive workers, the Lord awards the desired results of their prescribed duties as the Yageshwar. And those who are yogis seeking mystic powers are awarded such powers. In other words, everyone is dependent for success upon his mercy alone, and all kinds of spiritual processes are but different degrees of success on the same path. Unless, therefore, one comes to the highest perfection of Krishna consciousness, all attempts remain imperfect, as stated in Bhagavatam 2.3.10. Akama sarva kama ova moksha kama udara dihi. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether one is without desire, the condition of the devotees, or is desirous of all fruitive results, or is after liberation, one should with all efforts try to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for complete perfection, culminating in Krishna consciousness. So, this is a nice verse. First of all, the word bhajami is interesting. Bhajami is like worship, you know. It's from like bhaj or like bhakti. So Krishna is saying, I worship them. As they surrender to me, I surrender to them, in a sense. So the idea is he reciprocates. You know, bhakti really means reciprocation. Now, you can even apply that to like ordinary people or like the scientists. They're worshiping the external energy of Krishna, focusing on it, absorbing the mind, trying to figure out how it works, right? Why? So that they'll get some result. They'll be able to build something or create something new or get some name or fame. So it's nothing but Krishna. Krishna said, this is my external material energy, right? He's everywhere. So, but this is an impersonal aspect of Krishna. There's nothing personal about the earth as in and of itself. So they get that result. They're worshiping in that way. They're not worshiping the personal. They're getting some result in their scientific investigation, technology, whatever. And Prabhupada talks about the yogis, the impersonalists. Everyone is getting their result according to their approach of Krishna. Now, the problem with the approach to the material is that it's not satisfying. And so it's constantly changing. You remember we had this verse, Bahu Shaka, in Anantasta, that those who are too involved with bhoga and aishwarya, with material enjoyment and wealth, their attention is many-branched. Bahu Shaka means many branches. You're never satisfied with this, so you go to this. Well, let me try a little yoga. Let me try something spiritual. That's not satisfying. You know, you go a million different things. But each one of those different things is still Krishna, a different aspect of Krishna. And you're getting a certain result. So the idea is that we want to approach Krishna in a way that gives the greatest result, right? And what is that greatest result? Well, the end of all suffering entirely, and immersion in an ocean of ananda, if such a thing exists, and we are assured that it does by our acharyas. We read the lives of the great saints. Prahlad Maharaj, who was always in ecstasy, always in bliss, despite his external situation of kind of crush him into an elephant, throw him off a mountain, boil him in oil, and poison him. You know, so clearly his experience was not dependent on his external situation. He was entirely wrapped up with Krishna in his consciousness. You see, so the idea is that if we approach Krishna, following in the ways of the great souls, the Mahajans, as prescribed, then he'll reciprocate with us on a totally personal way. That's why, you know, this offering of food to the deity here, it's training. We're trying to get out of our impersonal, malaise, trying to think of only stones and bones and things like and offer Krishna with love this prasad, this bhoga that we prepare, you know. It's a training. The holy name, chanting the holy name, it's working on our heart, you know. Krishna, it's a personal name. It has to do with the qualities of Krishna, the activities, the lila, the world. Everything is personal, personal, personal. And if we approach the Lord in that way, then we'll get a personal result, you know. So that's the whole point. Everyone, sarvasha, all men, all human beings, and lower species, they're all serving Krishna. Even if we're serving our senses, that's also Krishna's energy. But Krishna's not visible there, in personal Krishna. You know. So the idea is that if we want the highest result, which is the personal abode, where everything is personal, you know, everything is alive there. The land, the trees, of course, and the everything is conscious. Impersonal covering is artificial. You know, we're living an artificial life here. We're floating on a machine, this body, made of the material energy. But it's a machine. You know, it's dead. It doesn't matter. Just like that car out, the car's out there. The car only moves when you get in and drive. This only moves when we get in it, when there's a soul in there. You know? But wouldn't it be wonderful to have a fully spiritual body? Where everything is made of, you know, Chidananda, Jyoti, effulgent, blissful substance. There's a world like that, according to Krishna. So, Krishna reciprocates. The demons, they want to kill him, all right, I'll fight with you and kill you. That's a reciprocation. We don't want that. We want to dance with Krishna. So it's a wonderful verse. Yeah, Yadama Buddhade, Tam Tadavi Bhajamyam. You'll only get out of this process what you put into it. As much as you surrender and you follow it and sincerely, you'll get result every time. Krishna is perfectly reciprocating with us. Okay, any final comment or question before we adjourn? Sorry, I didn't leave enough time for comments, questions. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.